Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Lifestyle Accountant. I'm joined by producer Eleanor.
Hi, Meryl. How you doing?
Yeah, doing well, thanks.
And who and what have we got to expect on today's podcast episode?
Today we have an interview with Electra Frost, and there's a couple of interesting aspects to her story. So she has built an accounting firm, scaled out advisory, and sold that, and after selling, freed up some time to go and explore different things that she was interested in. And one of those areas is blockchain. And so she's built a new business called Electrify, which solves
great crypto. Name. Amazing name. How could you not?
And so she specializes in crypto accounting, both helping businesses with those type of transactions, but also educating accountants and collaborating with accountants who might not have that as a strength to work with their clients around crypto transactions.
Awesome. And look, it's quite relevant to me at the moment. I am probably unsurprisingly overdue to do my personal tax. I've just changed accountants. And so you and I, Meryl, we actually spent a while exploring the Web3 blockchain crypto space. What was it, year before last year? So 2022 was our exploration. And so I earned some money in crypto at that time, and I'm still yet to reconcile all of that. And I haven't even broached it with my accountant to figure out if he even knows how to do that. I normally dread doing my tax, but then this has just made it even worse.
That's right. I'd forgotten. Well, you paid in Ethereum. Was that the
I was.
Currency?
Yeah. And look, my wages are looking mighty handsome right now because crypto took a real dive for a while, but the prices have been trending back up again. So I've just been watching that little look. I couldn't call it a nest egg, but maybe one day it might become a little nest egg if it carries on as it has been. So yeah, I worked for an NFT company for a while, and you worked for a DAO for a while, didn't you?
That's right. It stands for Decentralized Autonomous Organization. But really what that means is supposed to be community run. So rather than having a company that's owned by shareholders and has a few people making key decisions, instead of that, everybody has the ability to vote on different things or committee run. So I was in a podcast. I basically did it just as an experiment. So I was in a group called Podcast Hatchery, and I was involved in working on project management with different things within that group. But I did it just as an experiment to understand, how does an organization like this work? How do people get incentivized? How do you pay people? Being an accountant, I was interested in the payments side of things too.
Yes.
But as a business owner, I found it interesting. Listeners will know I'm not really into meetings, definitely not into decisions by committee. And because of the structure, I found there was a lot of talking to get consensus. And I also didn't feel that sometimes we didn't make the best decision because we were trying to get buy-in from everybody, and there was a lot of compromises to get agreement from everybody. And so if I was trying to build a small business, which is like what this DAO was doing, I think having one strong leader who people choose to follow their vision, rather than having a vision that's shared by 15 different people who all want to put their spin on it, and you don't end up with a clear vision and a clear path forward. So my insight into that experience was, in theory, it's nice to get everybody to collaborate and to get everybody's input. But if you're trying to build a business that moves fast, I think you're better with a strong leader or a strong pair of co-founders who then need to attract great people by making it a great organization or a great group to work with.
Which, look, and it applies to more than just DAOs. That applies to like community organizations, any group, university, bloody group projects. There's still always the A-plus student who's driving everything forward, isn't there? And some of the others are just like along for the ride.
I hate those group assignments.
Doesn't everybody? I don't think there's any person who's ever loved doing one of those. But yeah, it's a fascinating area. I think there's a lot of development still yet to come, both on that like an organizational and a leadership perspective, but on the technology front as well. How did you find we're talking 18 months ago, and in the Web3 blockchain space, that's basically the equivalent of like 10 years. So if we switch over to your accounting brain now, what was your experience of, say, the technology and the payments when you were part of that DAO?
Yeah, it was interesting. So the technology it's not like how it works with Xero, where there's a lot of automation. So I was helping on the payment side of things, and the technology wasn't yet there yet. So there was time tracking was done in a spreadsheet. Then that needed to be cross-checked against the project management system. And then it was a manual process of one by one making payments, and it felt a lot more error prone. So I didn't have the internal controls, but also I didn't have the automation. Whereas if I compare payments through something like Xero, where there's automation of timesheets connected or people's invoices loaded into Xero, you can easily approve and review things, and then you can upload it into a bank account to pay people. So I'd say that the technology will be there for that eventually on the blockchain side of things. Maybe it even is. I haven't looked at it for about 18 months, but I did notice as I was handling payments outside of the platforms I was used to, that it made me appreciate what Xero and other platforms in the space have built, both from an automation and an internal control perspective.
Which I guess they've also had a longer time at the wicket as such to be able to develop some of those things as well. So is your current perspective on, say, Web3, crypto, blockchain, from what I understand, is you're not really super actively involved in it right now, but you're keeping an eye on it a little bit. And, you know, I guess we're all waiting with bated breath to sort of see what it does turn into over the next, you know, 5-10 years, perhaps even more than that.
Yeah, so I did my little phase of exploration and then I backed off to focus on other things. But I do like to just keep an eye out. Okay, what problems are being solved? What are the use cases? Businesses adopting the technology? How are they using it? So I'm just going to keep an eye on things. There's potential in the space, but I think it's going to take many years for it to play out and for the technology to catch up.
Yeah. So especially after both of us have had some experience in that area, this episode with Electra was really interesting. And almost I don't feel like we probably quite had enough time of exploring all of those, the new technology and everything specifically for the accounting space. But before we dive into it, because actually the whole episode isn't all to do with crypto and Web3 and blockchain. There's a lot of other stuff to do with Electra's journey beforehand. Do you want to just give the listeners a bit of an overview of the rest of the episode and what you guys talk about?
Yeah, so we talk about Electra building out a niche in the creative industry and how she focused on that and scaled that. And then her move from Sydney to Agnes Water and what that was like. This is pre-COVID and back when it was more common to be face-to-face with clients. So how she managed that transition with her clients and her team. And she went through another transition, which was moving her clients from more retrospective tax type support to advisory monthly management accounts. And so we had an interesting conversation around how she repriced her clients, changed the scope, and clients really only had the option to sign up to that new service or find somewhere else. And so the way that she handled that was interesting, as well as upskilling as a tax accountant, upskilling into that management accounting area. We also had some fun talking about change of scope. And so when you are acting more as that in-house finance provider, scope can be unclear, things pop up. And so Electra had some ideas around how she'd handle that with clients to make sure that the work was still profitable. We also go into an exit. So she sold that business and has some interesting lessons around that sale process. So lots to cover here, as well as the crypto angle.
Yeah, it's quite a broad-ranging episode and conversation that you guys have. Let's have a listen.
And now a word from our sponsors. This podcast is brought to you by TeamUp, helping you to recruit top Filipino accountants without the ongoing monthly fees. They can source with experience working at US or Australian firms who are familiar with tools like Xero, QBO, and Dex. They can also recruit specialist roles like bookkeeping team leaders who have leadership experience and Australian tax specialists. I recently came on board as an investor and advisor to TeamUp, and I love their ethical approach to the offshoring industry, where they look after both the accounting firm and the Filipino accountant. Make sure to check out the TeamUp newsletter for more content on building top-tier accounting teams in the Philippines. That's at hireteamup.com, hireteamup.com. Electra, welcome to the show.
Hi, Meryl. Thanks for having me. Really happy to be here.
And it's good to have another Queenslander. I'm based on the Gold Coast, the southern end of Queensland, and you're a little bit further north. Do you want to describe where you are?
I'm on the last surf beach on the Australian East Coast before the crocodiles and stingers start. So I can go for a swim and in the surf, and I can go to the reef. Agnes Water 1770.
That's a good way of putting it. Well, we've got a few different topics that we're going to cover today. You've been an accounting firm owner for many years now, and I think you're known as, particularly in Australia, but maybe internationally, as the crypto accountant. But let's go back a little bit in the story before you got into crypto Web3. Can you talk about why you decided to start your own firm?
Well, I was working for a really good music industry accounting practice, because that was my background, music. And it was 2007-8. I was really encouraging clients. I had been since I started years before, encouraging clients to do everything paperless, get everything to me electronically and organized before the meeting so I could prepare. So by the time they'd come in, everything was ready and we were formulating advice. So that was just the way I liked to work. And I never liked paper. There just came a point where the opportunity came for me to open my own office, and I'd been listening to everything about like value pricing and paperless office, and that's what I wanted to do. I had a name in the creative industries, and a lot of creative businesses wanted to run better businesses, and I could see how. So it was passion driven, and I got started. By 2011, we were using client portals and cloud accounting with online questionnaires in our portals, and I was running the practice I liked until I started thinking maybe this could all be done online and I could live somewhere nicer than inner city Sydney.
And so when you were working with those creative type clients, what sort of services were you providing to them?
Well, it was mainly tax, but rather than just it being all about tax, I wanted to get small businesses. They're all self-employed. I wanted to get them onto using at least Excel spreadsheets, mm-hmm. and then cloud accounting systems so they were on a site, especially if they were GST registered. And mm-hmm. And so that was really important to me, to always have good accounting and reporting so that you could really understand how much money you had to do business with. Just the basics for small businesses in the creative space. I mean, there weren't very many accountants back then who mm-hmm. dealt with the creative industries in the 2000s, and not very many who kind of worked the way I did. So, yeah, that was, I believe it was appreciated because our practice grew.
And so you were living in Sydney, you were thinking about moving state, moving to a smaller town. What did your team look like at that point?
Oh, there were just a couple of us. There were about five of us working in Newtown. And when I started looking at the NBN rollout map in 2013, and then by the time we got to 2015, there were a few more of us in Stanmore, near Newtown and in Sydney. And, yeah, I ended up deciding on Agnes Water, and just 1,500 kilometres north of Sydney, and I just thought I could buy beautiful land house near the beach and I've got good internet. So I just told my team, you know, you could work in a WeWork or something and I could just be up here, and we carried on.
Yeah. And so what was that transition like? Did you have clients that expected you to meet in person? It sounds like your team might have been used to working with you from the same office.
Well, we had good IT support. We had synchronized servers still at the time, and as well as cloud. I've always kept one foot in the server space, even these days, I'm into self-custody crypto and being my own bank and owning my own data and having a self-sovereign identity. So I've always appreciated the server as well for security, but we were cloud, we were adaptable. So it worked. It worked very well. And I also employed up here, like Lisa Wilson has been working with me since 2016. I found her in Agnes Water, and we've been mm-hmm. working closely together since. And she got all our clients onto Xero and trained them and was fantastic. And now she's like a Web3 accountant sorting people out. She's come on the journey. So, yeah, it worked.
It sounds like the move went reasonably well. My own experience with Beaningers was a little bit different because we started out remote first. So we didn't have to go through that transition of getting clients to adjust or having team members adjust. So it's interesting hearing that you didn't have too much resistance.
I didn't finish there, did I? They didn't. Well, I was actually pretending to be in Sydney for a few years. I followed that quite often. But when COVID happened, it was like, okay, out in the open now, I'm staying up here. And they're like, that's fine. So I didn't travel so much. Yeah.
Right. So before that, you'd fly back for meetings, back to Sydney. And
I was, but less and less, and more people wanted to meet online. I think back then we forget, but it actually wasn't as normal to be remote. People did still mm-hmm. expect to see you in person, although a lot of my clients, people in the creative and industries, are fairly tech savvy. Mm-hmm. So it didn't matter to a lot of them. But now, surprisingly, some of the older – I still have older clients with me from mm-hmm. Sydney, and I haven't seen them for years. Some I haven't even met in 15 years. It is.
I think COVID definitely had an impact on getting people comfortable with working remotely, but also dealing with accountants and dealing with other people remotely. I think it's easier to build relationships in person, but you can definitely maintain them and potentially build them as well through other means.
I'm coming back around to that. Like, I've been up here 8 years now, and I'm traveling a lot again. And I do want to have a second home in the city. I did for a while in 2019, had a second home in Brisbane, sharing a flat with a girl. And that was good. We had a couple of staff in Brisbane too, but I've been completely online since. But I am going to the city again to, I think it's more for new business relationships and for mm-hmm. old business relationships that are scaling. So,
is that Brisbane? Person. When you say city, is that back to Brisbane or to Sydney?
Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne. Yeah. So I think this year I'll be traveling a little bit more.
I found that. So last year I spent a lot of time traveling to events because it does feel in person, you can just build those connections. And it's also just nice to maintain relationships too. My kids are still little, so I'm cutting back the travel this year, but that's more just a family decision. Then I can see the benefit of events and in-person relationships. So coming back to your firm, so you'd made the move to Agnes Waters, you've been working remotely, team and clients are all comfortable with that, especially post-COVID. Now, in a moment, we'll jump ahead to your new business, Electrify, which is in the crypto space. But I want to talk through what your original business, Electrofrost Accounting, was like around that time that you were getting interested in crypto and maybe thinking about starting something new. So what did the business look like? The clients, were they still in the creative space? The team, what did all of that look like?
Things changed a lot in 2020. I had about 800 clients at that stage and in the creative industries, and doing all the JobKeeper stuff was just crazy. Our team was amazing. They were fantastic. We handled it like we were set up. We were able to ride that because we were set up to work remotely, and we actually did all right. We did very well, but I was a bit overwhelmed. I didn't appreciate working for the ATO, it felt like.
I'm going to add a comment for our US listeners. So basically during COVID, there was programs like JobKeeper, which was the government's money being distributed to employees and to business owners, but they had accountants manage all of that. So many accountants feel like the ATO outsourced their work to us and we were unpaid in that process because it's quite hard to charge.
But I made lemonade out of those lemons because JobKeeper forced us to do monthly forecasts for our claim. So I went, right, and just across the board I implemented, if you're going to work with us, you have to do your accounts reconciled monthly and update your forecast, because we need to do that for JobKeeper and our claims and being diligent. So let's just do it and let's just keep doing it. So I just redesigned my entire service model so that the only businesses that went forward with us from there were ones that would commit to a monthly reconciliation, accounts reconciliation and reporting and advisory model. So that completely changed the way we worked. It took the seasonality out of our practice, and it made the quarterly and annual compliance obligations incidental because the work was already done. We already know 6 months before the end of the financial year what you're going to pay. We're updating forecasts every month or two. And And that model was really appreciated by my staff. Mm. It also meant we could charge a lot more and become a little bit of an internal accounting team for some of our clients mm-hmm. whose SMEs weren't big enough to employ people. And some accountants are doing that now. But COVID allowed me to remodel my practice to work the way we preferred to work.
I see a lot of opportunity in that space where it's the internal finance team. Some call it bookkeeping. I mean, there's different terms, management, accounting. I had this conversation recently on another episode with Jacqueline Anku. We were talking about community, but this came up in America. Sometimes it's called CAS, and then we had different definitions of that. Some people call it FinOps, but basically it's like the outsourced finance department of a business. It's more than just doing bookkeeping once a year at tax time or even after the fact bookkeeping.
Can we just call it accounting and make it the norm? Yeah.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? I would call it accounting, but when I introduce myself at a barbecue, if I say accounting, everyone assumes I'm a tax accountant, which
I'm not.
That's
the funny thing, Meryl, because I'm a chartered tax advisor with 2 degrees in tax law and like I'm more interested in management accounting and processes and systems and technology. I can still help with the tax, but yeah, it is assumed that that's the first thing we'll do. But what I like to do is have everything in order so that we've got reliable information to be able to prepare tax advice based on, because that was always my biggest frustration, that I wasn't giving good advice because the underlying information was not reliable.
And how did you build that skill set? Because I think a lot of people that come from a tax background often want to fix things with journals at the end of the year. How did you get into that monthly management accounting frame of mind and build that skill set?
Well, I spent quite a few nights just digging up old accounting textbooks, and one of my old staff members left some CPA program books. I sat down and I just sort of remembered, but I learned with familiar clients whose businesses I'd already known well for years, and we'd been constantly improving their accounting anyway and their systems. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it wasn't really that hard. And the tools that we use, the cash flow forecasting and reporting plugins for add-ons for Xero, really quite intuitive. And we just slotted right into it. And I think most public accountants can really. I think it's just, we are accountants. It's what we do. We don't just want to do tax all day. We want to help the businesses we work with. And so we know how.
It's true. I remember when I first had, my first role as a commercial accountant, so an in-house finance role, I had the senior accountant there training me and getting drummed into me not to fix things with journals. Go through accounts payable, go through accounts receivable. Mm. So I remember it took me a couple of months to change my mindset around.
That's true.
What we were doing.
That just fudge it with a journal, fix it on the clock. But the thing is, when you're being paid monthly by a client to make sure everything reconciles every month and you do all those journals as well, it's just, you don't do the fudget journals, you just do the accounts properly and not having to do a bunch of journals under time pressure at year end.
So what did you use to charge for that type of scope of work typically?
Yeah, good question. Like thinking back into like last decade before.
Well, it was around, I think you said around after COVID, so around 2021.
We definitely undercharged at first, and I wasn't tracking time because we were jumping around from job to job quite a lot and learning with our clients. But now the starting fee is generally, we have a few small clients, but they're mainly SMEs. We go for the 5 to 20 employees generally. Some have 40, 50. And started out around $2,000 a month. It was very low considering we were doing the bookkeeping, but now it's closer to $4,000, $5,000, $6,000.
Yeah. Mm. And did you have any challenges in repricing clients? Because it sounded like they at that certain point they had to start doing forecasting with you and move to that monthly reconciliation process. Did you have any pushback from clients, or some clients just naturally self-selected out of that? They weren't the right fit for that kind of...
Yeah, some certainly self-selected out, but most we've managed to sort of retain. They understand the value proposition that they're not having to employ those skills into their business, which would be very hard and risky to them if that person was sick or went on holidays. Like, we're always there. We're an outsourced solution and we know them very well. And we are quite invested into their businesses. If their businesses aren't doing well, we're at risk of losing half of someone's salary. Yes. So it goes both ways. It's very I believe it is a bit harder with SMEs in a challenging economic situation, as sometimes if they're not doing well, the first thing they might look at are the accounting fees, and they'll forget everything that they talked about with you and just go, why are your fees so expensive? Mm-hmm. But then if you sort of take away all the services that they enjoy, like being able to chat to you anytime in Google Spaces or Slack and being able to get support all the time, mm-hmm. then once they don't have that in their business, they realize they need to employ someone. So, mm-hmm. and that costs more. So yeah, it's interesting to discuss with clients. Sometimes depending on their business, I might say, well, our fees should land somewhere between 2-3% of your revenue. Mm-hmm. And as your revenue gets higher, that's going mm-hmm. to be a lower percentage. But yeah. for that's generally where I kind of throw the dart, and then we have our own internal budget. We know how long it takes for us to do their stuff, and we mm-hmm. do charge for out of scope work. We've had to be very careful with managing out of scope work, and it's always getting pushed, especially when they have trouble getting employees mm-hmm. and they push more and more onto us, or they realize, oh, maybe I won't replace that employee because it was friendly, helpful staff member keeps doing that for me whenever I ask. So there's a lot to manage.
That's really interesting. And I think that can happen more when you're providing services like that, where you're basically the in-house finance team, because mm-hmm. some in-house finance teams might take on some admin-ish tasks. So what would be an example of something where the client's trying to push it into your team, but it's a little bit out of scope, and how you handle it?
Yeah, look, it's often when a business is experiencing sort of cash flow disruptions. They'll need more and they'll expect it's included, or specific advice like for an R&D or an amendment, or not providing information and you've closed off and you've got to redo it again. Just sort of taking for granted that we do everything all the time. And mm-hmm. we've had to charge, I guess some clients have called it penalties. Yeah. For redoing work that's done the month before. But my staff have been called on to help with lots of things that are really more operational in nature. Mm-hmm. Then so I am rethinking this model, because I think what we are doing, the model, I really like it. It would be a model that I would scale an accounting practice with, but I'm not wanting to scale an accounting practice now. I'm wanting to do something a little bit different in accounting for the accounting industry. Mm-hmm. And however, I think this model that we're constantly improving is just as important in the mm-hmm. crypto space, more important.
Yeah. Yes.
So yeah, it's just very difficult to get right. And I think a lot of accountants do need support to get these models working right, especially in a small practice. You do need to have a team to make this economically more worthwhile.
So I think there's an opportunity to scale these kind of services as well, the FinOps, the outsourced finance, but it's a very different skill set from tax accounting. In my opinion, it's very systems-based and potentially high risk. If an accounting firm hires one or two bookkeepers to handle all of this without putting in place internal controls and managing risks, then I'd be worried about that as a firm owner.
Yeah. You've got to have your eye on the ball with all that, and I can, but because I've got my eye on other balls at the moment, I know that it would be risky for me to scale this practice model any further myself, because that's very true. You've got to be, it's got to be well managed. All the time.
Yes. And why do you think it's an opportunity to scale? What is it about that kind of services?
This sort of monthly, annual, ongoing service package. Mm-hmm. Well, I think if you've got a lot of clients who are very similar, mm-hmm. similar businesses, then you can kind of cookie cutter it a bit with personalized touches. Mm-hmm. If you've got clients who are all in different industries and there's only a few of you, then it's going to be you're going to be jumping around a lot. You're not going to be able to you're going to have to do a lot more customization, and that's more time consuming. And also staff are more likely, I believe, to give special attention to certain clients, and they might expect more and expect more. And mm-hmm. perhaps take it for granted. It's very, yeah, scope has been something we've discussed a lot. And it's not Electrofrost Advisory, which was the came after Electrofrost Accounting in 2020, with this service model, was really kind of experimentation for existing clients we had who needed a lot more from us. We just provided, and I sold my other practice and went down from 800 to 20, 30 clients to do this on the same revenue, which was interesting.
Oh, we need to dive into that too.
Close. not now, because some have self-selected out, and I've deliberately scaled it down so that I'm only working a few days a week so that I can concentrate on other projects. That's been very deliberate. But I know if I was doing this full-time, it could be with my full-time focus, it could, and yeah, scaled with more staff, it would be, I think we've nailed it. I think we'd do it well.
Could you talk about selling down from the 800 clients to 30 and what that process was like? Making the decision that you wanted to sell, finding the buyer, all of that.
Yeah, look, in 2020 when we were doing so much, I didn't like the way the things in the Australian tax practice were going. I did not see a great future for myself as a tax practitioner. I like being a tax advisor. I like solving people's problems, but I was more interested in really guiding my clients' businesses to adapt with technologies and new processes and approaches and to the future. So thinking back, I mean, when we were working 80-hour weeks, it was in May 2020, it was during lockdown, and I went to this remote little beach house, and I was supposed to have 10 days off, and I spent the whole time just designing my new practice so I could get out of tax. And I rang our broker, my broker, and said, can we do this, please? I need to go forward with a new business model. I've designed the logo. Let's go.
Yeah. And so what did that sale process look like? So you already knew a broker who was it that accounting a specialist in the accounting space or someone with general businesses?
Yeah. Yeah. He's well known in the accounting space and great guy to work with. And so yeah, it was very difficult for me though, because I was quite connected with all the 800 clients. Some of them didn't know me.
Yeah.
They thought Electrofrost sounded like a partnership. But a lot of them did know me, and it was very difficult to find other accountants who would understand them and the nuances of their industry in film, television, entertainment, arts. But there were also quite a few clients who were quite happy to just change accountants as long as they were looked after. So we found our competitor in Sydney, took the clients and some of our staff and looked after them from there. And we also sold them our systems. They hadn't used Xero. They were on another system. They were on a server. So it was a great opportunity for them to just take and all my online questionnaire templates. So it was like they just bought an entire digital practice. With these clients, and in they were a creative industries practice themselves, so it was a good little sort of upgrade opportunity for them.
And did you know them personally before that deal process happened?
Yeah, we weren't mates, but we knew each other and respected each other in the industry. Yeah.
So you found a broker to work with, and what did that process look like in terms of them bringing back potential buyers to you? Did they bring back multiple buyers? What was that like?
Well, we really needed to find a buyer who was used to working with the creative industries. That was really important to ensure that the clients would be comfortable to change, because the reason why they came to us and stayed with us was because they were understood. So that was very important to me to preserve my reputation, because it's when you've had clients for a very long time, and some of them went back to me since before I became an accountant. And so, he was great. Kev was great in making sure that we found the right buyer who was known in the industry as a creative industries accountant. And I really didn't get much pushback from the clients at all. They were quite pleased, really, that they were being looked after.
And when it comes to negotiating a deal like that, do you have any tips for other sellers about terms to negotiate on or things to watch out for?
Yeah, look, getting a really well-worded sales contract in place, if you're a seller, definitely take the initiative on that and work with your lawyers to make sure that the retention clause, you really understand it. The negotiations were really interesting in getting that agreement signed. Lots of going back and forth, and I learned a lot about negotiation in that process. It was a great experience, and I think it made me a better negotiator, and we were all happy with how it went ahead. And over time there were some misunderstandings, but we were able to go back to a very well-written agreement with strong retention clauses that protected my interests.
I think that's a really good tip. And just to explain, so a retention clause is where often, and it sounds like in this case, a client list is being purchased. And so if clients don't stay or if they leave within a certain period of time, then that can impact how much the acquirer pays, or a certain amount has been retained, so that money is set aside and that hasn't been paid to you and won't be if clients leave within a certain period. When I sold part of Bee Ninjas Australia, that was a clause that we had in the contract, and something we had to agree on was, well, at what point does responsibility pass to the acquirer? And so we ended up drafting that around dates. So after a certain period of time and a certain number of BASs lodged, then responsibility was on the acquirer. So I think that's a good tip, just generally around the retention clause. Yeah. And so what did you do once you sold a big part of that practice?
Oh, it was an incredible feeling that I was now able to have a bit more time and a bit of financial freedom and space to be able to study blockchain and set up a center, which was all about studying blockchain and Bitcoin in our community, and the Digital Playhouse Foundation. And from there, I was able to go forward with a practice with just a much smaller number of clients who needed more focus from us on their business affairs, and with fewer staff to manage. And I was very happy with how it all worked out, actually.
And it sounds like you're able to fit most of your accounting work into a couple of days a week now, so you can work on these other ventures too. So what is Electrify?
Okay, so, well, I just woke up a year ago at 2 a.m. and thought of Electrify and jumped out of bed and went, I've got to see if that's available, and registered all the domains and business names and went for it. And that was it. I had to change my company name to Electrify. But I did have a bit of an idea with it, because I was working so much with Digital Playhouse Foundation. Digital Playhouse Foundation is a registered charity for digital and financial literacy. It's a PBI, it's Advancing Public and Social Welfare through adaptation of existing skills for people to new opportunities with emerging technologies. So we do focus a lot on youth and people at risk in the creative fields, and also accountants. Mm-hmm. So we have this model called Learn, Build, Support, which symbolise our three flagship projects, which is the School of Bitcoin, which is a decentralised autonomous education system, or a community of people who are teaching Bitcoin to each other and using the technology. And it's not all about Bitcoin. It's just that Bitcoin was the genesis block of this entire movement, and that's where you begin to learn. And so that's the learning model. And then we have Build, which is Stacks Australia. And Stacks Australia is the Australian cohort for the Stacks blockchain, which is a independent blockchain that works as a layer 2 to Bitcoin, so that you can build decentralized applications, smart contracts, and DeFi on Bitcoin, anchored to Bitcoin. So it basically provides a programmable, it turns Bitcoin into a programmable base layer. So that's in the building on Bitcoin movement. So some say that Ethereum was the test net for Bitcoin, because everything that you can build in those other chains now is starting to happen in Bitcoin, which is really amazing and interesting. Mm-hmm. So we are working in that space to build applications and to grow a community of developers and builders and founders who will build applications. Now, when you've got startups, you need accountants. So mm-hmm. we have the third piece of the puzzle, which is the support, Learn, Build, Support. The accountants are also learning alongside the developers and startups and the School of Bitcoin on how to provide accounting services to people who are growing businesses in the decentralized digital economy. So we're all learning together and supporting each other. So the Accountants on Chain movement was that. And I really wanted to bring my accounting practice closer to Accountants on Chain, which is why I came up with Electrify, which is a continuum of our of my accounting practice service model, but with a crypto business focus. So we do get the crypto businesses approach us for help, but it's a very different model in that our mission is to bring the accounting and blockchain and Bitcoin Web3 industries together. So it's a co-opetition model with the accounting industry, which means like co-opetition is about collaboration. It's about working with your competitors so that you can all do better together. Mm-hmm. So I believe that every accountant will be a crypto accountant by 2030. It'll just be normal. All currencies will be digital. All assets are being digitized, tokenized. Some will be centralized, some will be decentralized. And if you're an accountant who is only going to deal with the centralized digital currencies and assets, you might be missing out on a lot of businesses that need your help that need an accountant who can navigate the full spectrum of centralized and decentralized. So basically, when a business comes to us for our help, one of the first questions is, who's your accountant and your bookkeeper? Can we get them involved? Because then I don't have to do a 1 to 3 month discovery of your business. We can just involve them, get to work, and they can upskill like we did.
And so what does that look like? So a business has come to you because they need some crypto accounting expertise. They already have their existing bookkeeper and accountant. So which bits do you do and which bits do the accountant handle, and what does that engagement look like?
Well, I'm figuring out that service model with accountants, so it's different with each one so far. And it hasn't been entirely formalized. So we're mainly working with the businesses at the moment who have been happy to continue with us and not involve their accountant because their accountant wasn't willing to get into it. Accountants have a lot on their plate. But I think this model will become more relevant in the next year or two. And so I just wanted to get in early with designing it and getting feedback from the accounting industry on whether they think this is something that they need, that they will need. Because I think once we get the clarification on the tax laws and the accounting approaches, then businesses will be encouraged to adopt it and people will be starting new businesses. And it's a real freelancers economy. It's not just going to be the big end of town. It's going to be all these self-employed people that most SME accountants deal with. 1 in 5 Australians have crypto. Mm-hmm. So they might start using it more than just holding on to it, waiting for it to go up in value.
Actually, just quickly on that. So I was interested in crypto back in 2022 and worked for a DAO just to see what it was like and really dived into the space for a little while. And then there was a whole lot of, so the prices took a dip, and then there was Sam Bankman-Fried, that debacle, and the prices really dropped. And it felt like interest dropped, but that could have just been public perception. You've got a finger on the pulse. What does it feel like on the inside?
Well, when that happened, SBF, he's called, his team, they didn't even have an accounting department, right? Yeah. They didn't. They were doing Excel screenshots for their financial statements. There was it was the absolute worst. I think it was just a call to action for the accounting industry that this industry needs us. But the issue was, these were the custodians of other people's crypto. Now, the real decentralized digital economy doesn't have custodians. It's just peer-to-peer and smart contracts. Code is law. Not really, but it's trustless or trust minimized, meaning you're not using exchanges. You are your own bank. But where people onboard into this space is through the custodians. We need them, and they need to be regulated, and they are being more regulated now. So there's, as the space is maturing, but it does need accountants to get involved and assert that they should be doing monthly reconciliations with crypto accounting software and reporting to stakeholders. And I think it's, blockchain is a governance and accounting technology. We need to be there. So I think that's what it was all about. And things went really quiet for a while. Some really good projects struggled that needn't have, but because the market just dropped, it was suddenly startups that had gotten their funding in tokens and crypto that wasn't worth as much couldn't continue to pay their expenses to keep going. And but many did survive and are still going now. The really worthy projects, the people who are really committed kept going. And look, we had the bull market appears to be picking up again now, and we're like, oh, can it just stay quiet for a bit longer? Because we're building applications and we don't want it to get noisy with all the investors yet. But it's good. This year is going to be really exciting, it appears, with all the new interest in Bitcoin ETFs. And so, yeah.
What are your favorite accounting tools at the moment in the crypto accounting space?
Well, it really depends on the type of client. Oh, it's there are quite a few now. So when there's crypto tax software. So we don't deal a lot with individuals. So there's the crypto tax calculator and Coinly and Siler. They're good, and a lot of people use those for tax returns. Some accountants also try to do businesses. Import business wallets into that tax software, but that doesn't get it into Xero or QuickBooks very easily. So there's a lot of manual work and spreadsheets involved there, which can be error prone and extremely time consuming. So for that reason, we use crypto subledger accounting software. And it's very important to use this software because it integrates with Xero and QuickBooks. It's not like the tax software. And if you've used inventory management systems or e-commerce accounting add-ons, that they help us to aggregate and reconcile vast volumes of transaction data and get it posted automatically into the general ledger. So we don't have to deal with loads of spreadsheets. That's the idea of getting all this data from multiple wallets on the blockchain, wallet addresses on the blockchain, into the crypto subledger software, where it can be indexed, classified, and then mapped to Xero accounts and pushed through. So not many accountants are using these specific tools yet. Most crypto accountants are struggling to do it with the tax software and Excel, as I mentioned, and manual journals that can be unsuited to the task when you've got tens of thousands of transactions every month. And, yeah, I think with going back to your question of what businesses will be doing with it, SMEs are probably looking this year, I think, to tokenize real-world assets, data notarization, verified credentials, and finding new ways to raise capital and access liquidity. So I think that there will be potentially more transacting in fiat-pegged stable coins and other types of crypto stable coins rather than like payments with Bitcoin.
Do you want to explain what that is? Sorry, do you want to just explain what a stablecoin is for the listeners?
It's basically a crypto coin that's pegged to the value of either fiat dollars or another crypto. So it's like a synthesized currency, perhaps. And it may be used in like DeFi environments or for microtransactions, very fast and low fees. So that's what I think we'll need to get used to, a lot more. Much higher volume transactions and more complexity, especially as more businesses start to use DeFi and tokenize assets to raise capital. And so the normal money you see doesn't really work on blockchain. So if you're using decentralized applications on blockchain, which is like a new kind of internet in simple terms, you have to use the digital currency, not the normal currency with payment gateways like Visa and you know, so, and Xero can't handle the digital currencies, the crypto. The numbers are too long, so you have to use the crypto subledger software to sort it out before it goes into Xero.
And what's the best crypto subledger software that you think?
We use a number of them, and look, it really depends on the type of business. We like CryptoWorth. AEM Journaler in Australia is a good one because it has an Australian founder who's a BAS agent and understands Australian businesses very well, and he's also based in Asia as well. We also like Bitwave and Cryptio and Integral and a few others that clients have been using that's suited them, whether they have like more NFTs or more DeFi in their business model. So,
all right. And is there anything else that you'd like to add about crypto for accountants before we move on? We've got another topic to cover as well.
Yeah, okay. So yeah. I just say, look, Lisa just did a Web3, Lisa, senior accountant here, just did a Web3 course and a Web3 accounting course. And she said, like, she already knew how to do quite a fair bit of crypto accounting, but it really took the fear out of it. And she encouraged other accountants to do it, because accountants say, I don't understand crypto, I won't be doing that. But really, don't be afraid. It's absolutely in our skill set. And with the regulatory updates this year, digital currencies will just become part of our normal. So, yeah, just get in and start using it yourself a little bit with small amounts and start seeing how to move money around. And if one of your clients wants to use it in their business, be ready to have that conversation. And yeah, Electrify is here to back you up. We can kind of de-risk some of that for you, because if you don't feel competent to deal with a client who's bringing crypto into their business, then having a specialist involved in the process combined with your familiarity with that client's business is a really good service to the client, and it can also protect you from audit.
Yeah.
ATO and audits.
Yeah. And just quickly, what were the regulatory changes that you mentioned? I'm not up to date these days.
Oh, well, everyone's waiting with bated breath for a long time for the Taxation Board's report on the taxation of digital assets and transactions in Australia. So there's and token mapping and there's a fair bit coming in Australia this year. So it's been very challenging for regulators, because the technology has been changing so rapidly, and it still is. So they're having to come up with regulations, guidance that is adaptable to further change, that won't stifle innovation or create more expensive problems. But at the moment, it's incredibly expensive for people in the blockchain and crypto space to get legal and accounting advice and support, because it's so specialized and it's so unclear and complicated. And look, they do need to be prepared for that. If you are providing services in this space, it's okay to charge 3 to 5 times more than you would a normal client, because it's more complex. You've put in a thousand hours to learn about it for them. And they should be, those sorts of clients should be prepared to pay for it. So
Well said. Well, let's change tack slightly. And now I wanted to talk about trade shows and events. So I was at an accounting conference last year, Accounting Business Expo, and I walked in the main entrance and there was a stand that caught my eye, and it was your stand. So I'd love to hear, I think that's impressive for a new business competing for eyeballs and visitors with a whole lot of tech startups. Well, not even startups, some of them are pretty well established with big budgets for trade shows. And there were you with a stand that had lots of people visiting and catching people's attention. So tell me about the strategy. Why were you there? And then let's get into the nitty-gritty of how you planned for your booth on the trade show.
Okay. Well, Meryl, you were electrified at Accounting Business Expo 2023. That was our slogan. And yeah, we're very appreciative of the Accounting Business Expo team for putting us in such a prominently visible position near the entrance with our big blow up Bitcoin. So that was great, because people saw us and came straight to it, or they gave us a wide berth, but we had a really wonderful time. Look, I just wanted to make it really fun. I'd never done anything like that before. I didn't know what I was getting into. I just went, oh yeah, we can do an exhibition stand. I had no assistance, no support. I had to design the entire thing from scratch on Canva, and I didn't have much money and much of a budget for it. So yeah, but I ordered everything. We created swag. But I wanted to make something really fun. I wanted digital swag. I wanted to give accountants an experience at our stand. So we got little tables and chairs and set up a space to be onboarded to digital assets. Mm-hmm. So, because you always remember the first person who got you to download a wallet and get crypto. Right? Mm-hmm. So we weren't getting them to get crypto, but what we were doing was we were giving them an NFT, a special kind of NFT called a POAP, which is the proof of attendance protocol. It's a way, it's a digital badge on the blockchain that says you were somewhere. And so we had the I was electrified at Accounting Business Expo POAP NFT. And if you came and you downloaded the digital wallet at our stand, then we showed you how to do that, to write down the seed words, because it was a a self-custody, non-custodial digital wallet. And so that NFT was yours and your proof that you were there. Yeah. So, and they've got a record of it on Ethereum. On the Ethereum blockchain. And yeah, the HODL Labs, we hired Steve McFadden to attend our stand and onboard the accountants. He did a wonderful job. We made it a lot of fun. And our bum bags were a big hit as well, our electrified bum bags, because the way I learned everything was listening to audio books and podcasts when I went walking. So I was telling everyone to listen to audio podcasts and with a bum bag.
So where did you go to learn about having a successful trade show, or what were you thinking about when you were creating the booth and how to design it, and what you even needed?
I had been to quite a few of them before, and I liked the ones that engaged me, that had a game or something. I liked getting stuff. Mm-hmm. I love swag as well, but I wanted good swag, useful swag. So I spent way too much time designing all my swag from scratch, including like the steel desk coasters and the backgrounds that I got printed at Office Works, and I designed everything on Canva with Bitcoins, and I just wanted to make it really stand out, and it did. So
yeah,
it was fun.
So if an accountant was thinking about doing something like this, they might not go to something like the Accounting Business Expo, because that's for accountants. But if they're trying to go into a network where their clients hang out and they're interested in having a booth, if they're going to do the DIY option like you mentioned, what kind of budget do you think you'd recommend just for setting up the booth and for swag if they're doing a DIY? And how much time should they set aside to get organized?
Well, expect on a budget to be spending between 10 and 15K if you're going to be really tight, like I was with swag as well. But you can easily blow out to over 20, especially if you're paying people to work on it with you. But what's most important is don't do what everyone else does. Think about a memorable experience. And that's what we created and managed to create, was a people's first digital asset that had utility. It entitled them to engage with us at a later point for educational purposes. So it was interesting to discuss and talk about, and I would just plan to be original.
And would you do it again? Would you include trade shows or booths as part of your ongoing strategy, and would you recommend it to other accountants, or do you think there's other strategies where you get a better ROI?
I think it was a good idea for us to do, even though we didn't have much to sell at the time, but we wanted to position ourselves in the market and be remembered as those crypto accountants who help accountants. So that was our main purpose for doing it, was for brand recognition. Would I do it again to follow up on that? Yes, I will do it again next year after we've developed our products a bit more and our offerings. And it really depends on the sort of, we did it as like a startup, and other startups just have like the small cheap stand. That's the other way to do it. But we really wanted to make an impact and have a bit of fun. And also, we live in Agnes Water. So being able to come back to Sydney, Darling Harbour, where I'm from, I grew up in Inner City Sydney. So I was like really excited to be in the thick of it again. And it was a lot of it was just for us, really. We had fun.
That's great.
I don't know how that helps other accountants, but if you are going to do these things, if you are having fun, it's going to rub off, isn't it, and attract people to your stand. And I think that's what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. Electra, is there anything else you'd like to share about crypto accounting?
Something that's been on my mind a lot lately as accountants approaching the whole blockchain and crypto space are pretty wary. They're hesitant to get into it. Some won't even discuss it when you bring it up, or they'll flip it off as a fad, and are sticking to our comfort zones. Maybe even trying to hold on to being experts in the digital arena, which is totally understandable. But the thing is, blockchain is not a fad. It's not a new toy for tech. Clients are looking at it, and it can be a real game changer for how we think about transparency and efficiency and financial inclusion on a global scale. And that includes for small businesses and entrepreneurs. So your clients will be looking at this. And when they do, you can, if you are taking an interest in this space, they will trust you. If you are not experienced at doing it yourself, if you do have someone like me and my team at Electrify, you can just contact us and we can have a chat with you about how you might be able to help that client and how we might be able to work together. So Yeah, don't shy away from it, because once you've had that one and gone through that process with one client, and we'll show you how, from the beginning to mapping all the wallets, to picking the right software, to making sure they've got the right processes and systems and documents in place, and then doing the journals and all the way through to getting it into Xero, making sure you've got a tax reconciliation and know what to do next, and providing tax guidance. We're going to step you through that, and you're going to know the client well and come out of that with a kit for next time. So yeah, don't be afraid. Get in touch if you do have a client who brings it up, because that could be your opportunity. I had the opportunity in 2013 when my client needed to pay people overseas in Bitcoin, and we just had to figure it out on our own. But it would have been really good if someone had showed us back then what to do.
Amazing. And is the best way to reach out to you on the Electrify website or somewhere different?
I'm very active on LinkedIn. Please connect with me on LinkedIn and personally send a message. And if you are interested in this space, in learning more and doing more, I could connect you with groups or activities, or it's about getting active. It's a really good community in the blockchain space, and accountants are collaborating more in it. So do get in touch or reach out to me through the electrify.finance website.
Amazing. Well, Electra, thanks so much for stopping by the podcast.
Thank you, Meryl. It's been great talking with you.
I had a lot of fun chatting with Electra, and I think she's a great example of living out the values of the Lifestyle Accountant Show. She moved to a country town so that she could live the life that she wanted. In selling her business, she freed up the headspace and time so that she could explore an area of passion, and then has rebuilt a new business, Electrify, based on something that she's interested in and an opportunity that she's seen in the market. So a really fun conversation with Electra, and great to see accountants living out the Lifestyle Accountant Show values.
We should start giving out gold stars or something. if you enjoyed this episode, please give us a shout out at ratethispodcast.com/lifestyle accountant.
We'll be back again same time next week.